The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening. Again, for those of you who were here for the guided meditation, this is the second good evening. And for the next few weeks, I'm going to do a series on going for refuge. Just, I've been reflecting that things are a little bit unsettled here in the United States. And what can be a support? What can be a way that can bring some stability in whatever happens in the next few weeks? So for the next few weeks, for each week, I hope to unpack a little bit, what does this mean, going for refuge? Including, like, why we might have some hesitation or feel like we're allergic to something like that. And what is it we take refuge in? Those things that are supportive, maybe those things that turn out to not be so supportive. As a way to hopefully bring some stability, some direction, some orientation for these next few weeks. And for me, I feel, gladdened somehow, maybe buoyed, or to bring to mind that for millennia, Buddhists have taken refuge. There's this way that we're connected to thousands and millions, untold numbers of people who have taken refuge, and in their lifetimes there have been untold numbers of difficulties. So for me, it's meaningful that this activity of going for refuge is recorded in the earliest discourses from the time of the Buddha. So there's this living connection to so many people who have done this before. So what is this idea of refuge? As I said, I'll be unpacking this a little bit more and more as the weeks ensue. But we can think of it as a place of safety. In some ways, maybe as a place of protection, maybe even a protective enclosure, where we can rest or feel supported. We don't have to be so maybe vigilant, or we don't have to be so on guard and ill at ease. And perhaps we might imagine sheltering under a large ancient tree. A tree that has deep roots and a big trunk, big sturdy trunk, and a really wide canopy. Maybe it's not even super wide, maybe it's just wide enough for us. There's so many different ways we can imagine this, but the branches reaching out and around and creating this kind of safe, sheltering place. This ancient tree has seen so much of the comings and goings of so many people's lives, and still it's still standing there. And it provides shelter from too much sun, too much rain. But of course, it shelters us in a way that doesn't isolate us. We're still connected to the environment, to what's happening, and maybe it doesn't shelter us so that we never even know whether the sun is shining, or it doesn't shelter us so much that we don't even know that the rain is raining, that the rain is falling. So it's permeable, but yet sheltering. I don't know, I like this image. Connected to nature and way that it's natural. And so we can think of a refuge as a protective enclosure of sorts, maybe a tree. And we can think of going for refuge as an orientation, as just this feeling of no longer being disoriented, this feeling of having a direction. It's if you've ever had that feeling tumbling in the waves, like in the ocean, somehow getting caught in the waves and feeling like, oh, I'm not even sure which way is up. It's a terrible feeling. Sometimes we even have that with our emotions, not even know which way is up. But once we recognize, like, oh yeah, the up is this way. I know that when I was learning to do some whitewater kayaking, this is something we would practice a lot, right? Just to roll, to do a roll. And that was part of the big part of it. It was just to be oriented in space. And it's a skill. It's something that you have to practice. Okay, when there's water all around, how do you move the paddle in such a way that you can be upright again? So this having a sense of direction, having a sense of which way is upright, it can be subtle in our everyday lives, but it's really significant. It comes with a certain amount of confidence and a certain amount of ease, especially when we compare it to being disoriented. And so this orientation may be very broadly, really generally, we could say something about not causing harm and or going towards greater freedom. Just in this not harming ourselves, not harming others, and the way that we practice, we discover more and more how we might be causing harm. We become more sensitive. And this word harm starts to represent something that's really, really subtle. Maybe it's just like a contraction or a tightness, not some overt harm. And it's orienting ourselves towards what is beneficial and what is helpful and what is wholesome. And orienting towards just creating the conditions for greater freedom, for greater ease, for wholesomeness, without the burden of feeling like we have to make everything happen. We have to engineer and manufacture, manipulate everything, but more just putting in place the conditions that can support greater freedom. And this orientation towards what's onward leading, that is recognizing when we're stuck and going round and round in circles, and is there an orientation towards finding our way towards getting unstuck in so many different ways. So having this type of an orientation informs our intentions, informs our aspirations, and in this way it can influence our actions, whether that's actions of the body or actions of speech or actions of mind. And it can creates a framework for our experience. This having an orientation, having a direction, kind of creates an organizational schema of sorts. That is, that the recognition that our experiences aren't random, they're not chaotic, they make sense, even if we don't know exactly why, we can have some confidence that there are reasons why things are happening, even if it's not clear to us at the moment. Somehow that we can rest in that. There isn't magic, there isn't randomness. And bringing ourselves to this orientation towards greater freedom, greater ease, towards not being stuck. This repeatedly doing this is transformative. Kind of like the rudder on a boat. Oh, if we kind of like set the rudder a certain direction, you know, it might just be a small little change in the rudder, but, you know, if you go for a long distance, that small little change makes a difference in where you go, where you end up. Maybe if you were heading west of here in the Bay Area, California, and you wanted to go to Hawaii, you would set the rudder one place, but maybe if it was a little bit off, you'd find yourself in Japan. Both Hawaii and Japan are perfectly fine places to go, perhaps, but maybe if you had set your intention of going to one place, you don't want to go to another place. So we have to check the rudder and this kind of repeatedly maybe reorient ourselves. But it can be transformative. In the same way that repeatedly coming back to the breath, kind of like orienting towards the sensations of breathing, for example, is a way, if we do this repeatedly, just allows the body, the mind to relax, to soften, to get collected, and have greater ease. Again and again, however many times is needed. It doesn't matter how many times. Just however many times it's needed. And in this way, having this orientation and this reorientation is portable. That is, it can help us, it can support us, whatever arises. In any situation, and it allows for something different to arise in our life, as we do this reorientation, taking refuge, because we're no longer relying on something outside of ourselves. Instead, independent of what's happening, we are orienting towards greater freedom, towards greater ease, towards what we know is beneficial and wholesome. In some ways, in many ways perhaps, taking refuge can be a source of great happiness. I know for me that the first time that I took refuge in a way that was, it was here in this very room, and Gil was teaching a few weeks, I don't remember how many weeks, how long the course was. And it was quite meaningful for me to really kind of reflect deeply, do some of the exercises, and over the weeks to have this, set this as my intention, and then to go through a ceremony, which was quite touching. Maybe as an aside, I'll say we're thinking about how we might be able to do this to provide it to our greater online community in the spring, so can keep your eyes on the IMC calendar for something like this. But for me, as it happened, just by chance, I sat next to a good friend of mine and for this ceremony, and somehow I felt like we shared it, taking refuge together, and that was also really meaningful for me. But the happiness comes from a number of things, including developing qualities we can be proud of in some ways. Things like kindness and sensitivity, equanimity, mindfulness, discernment. These are things that, qualities that we cultivate and develop as part of this Buddhist path, as part of taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So there's a sutta passage that talks about this that I modified just a little bit, and it goes like this. There are three kinds of overflowing goodness. They nurture happiness and ripen in happiness. They lead to what is likable, desirable, agreeable, to welfare and happiness. And what are these three? Firstly, a noble disciple has gone for refuge to the Buddha. This is the first kind of overflowing goodness. Furthermore, a noble disciple has gone for refuge to the Dharma. This is the second kind of overflowing goodness. Furthermore, a noble disciple has gone for refuge to the Sangha. This is the third kind of overflowing goodness. I like this idea of overflowing goodness in such a way that the overflowing, that it leads, it leaks out of us, leads to others, and kind of everything that we're involved with somehow gets touched with this goodness. So in some ways this brings happiness and brings confidence to all of us. So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about taking refuge in the Buddha. In subsequent weeks I'll talk about taking refuge in the Dharma and in the Sangha. So there's a number of ways in which we can think about going for refuge in the Buddha. One is refuge in the biography of the Buddha, that is, the story of the Buddha's life. And without concern of the historicity of the story, whether this is actually true, whether this actually happened, but the tradition holds this story about the Buddha's life story. And there are a number of elements that I find supportive and inspiring, and as it happens right now, I'm teaching a course at the university on the life of the Buddha. So I'm spending a lot of time reading the suttas and reading what scholars have said and what Dharma teachers have said and really looking at this. And I'm actually surprising myself by how touched I am by this. So here's a few things. In the story of the Buddha, was right that he was this prince that had this very sheltered existence, and it wasn't until he was a young man that he encountered old age, sickness, and death, individuals that had old age, sickness, and death, and he was baffled by them, but ended up leaving this palace in order to find an end to suffering. In some ways, it's healthy young people do feel immortal. While they might have an intellectual understanding that they too someday will grow old and have sickness and die, but that understanding is too abstract. It's maybe too theoretical to make any significant impact in their lives. And that certainly was the case for me when I was younger. I wasn't thinking about old age, sickness, and death. But more and more I think about it, as, you know, people I know die, I see myself aging, seeing other people aging. But sooner or later, all of us, we come into contact with the reality of impermanence. We're confronted with this. And somehow I appreciate this portion of the biography of the Buddha, that just like many of us, when he was young, he wasn't impacted by it, and it wasn't until he was older that he was impacted by it. Another piece of the story of the Buddha's life is that he tried a number of different practices until he found one that led to awakening. And we have the good fortune that he taught it to others who down through the millennia have taught it to us. But he studied with different teachers, looking for what felt right or how he could find greater and greater freedom. He tried different practices. He tried some asceticism, some extreme self-mortification, until he found a practice that was more of a middle way, that didn't indulge completely in sense pleasures and didn't shy away from the pleasures that are possible, but had a middle way. So I think so many of us also too, right? We maybe try different things before we find a way that makes sense to us and we experience greater freedom and ease with. Even if we haven't found our way all the way completely to awakening, but to recognize that, okay, we're just like the Buddha, he had to find his way. We're finding our way too. Maybe the last element of the Buddha's biography I'll talk about now that I feel touched by and inspired by was the way that he died. In fact, when I was reading the discourses that describe his death, I found myself getting a little bit tender, maybe I'll use, or sad about it. It's very touching the way it is described. And with his death, he had real clarity of mind. He had mindfulness and lots of concentration. And he treated everybody with care and with respect and asked people, okay, are there any questions? I'm dying now. Do you have any last questions? And there's a person who goes up to him and, you know, wants to learn some of the Dharma, and everybody said, no, don't go bother the Buddha, he's dying, can't you tell? But the Buddha says, no, I'll teach him. I'll give him some teaching. So even to his, you know, dying moments, he has this generosity of spirit. And somehow I kind of like that even at the end he's a little bit cranky too, that he, there's the story that he asked the monk Upavana, who was fanning the Buddha, he asks him, can you just step aside, move aside? And Ananda, who's a little bit surprised at the way that the Buddha says this, asks the Buddha, but Upavana for years has been fanning you and you've never asked him to just step aside. Why are you doing this now? And the Buddha replies, well, there's others who want to see me because I'm dying and this will be their last chance. And Upavana is standing like right in front of me, fanning. I don't know, this gives a little bit of the human quality. But he died with tremendous grace and ease, not complaining, able to use his mind with some concentration. And I feel inspired by this and take refuge in the idea that this is possible. That death will happen to all of us, but maybe there's a way in which we can bring a certain amount of grace as best we can. So we can also take refuge in the awakening of the Buddha, not only the life story, but the fact that he had this experience of awakening, enlightenment. And he describes how his mind became free and the heart was at peace and completely free of greed, hatred, and delusion. And he had a way of living that is radically different than a life that is caught up in expressing greed or expressing hatred or expressing delusion, or different life than having a mind and that's caught up in fear or apologizing for oneself or proving oneself or defending oneself. He had a very different life. This awakening allowed and this inner change that was based on well-being, based on truth, based on knowing. And this letting go of all the ways of being agitated and where the heart and the mind become peaceful. We can find this inspiring. Maybe in some ways we have touched into some type of experience that lets us know that something like this is possible. Maybe in some kind of way we've had a hint or an intuition, or maybe perhaps a clear indication that there can be a different way in which the mind can be, in which the heart can be, in which it's free and not agitated. Maybe we've experienced a little bit of an opening or a touchstone something that keeps us coming back to the practice, even though sometimes it feels difficult. Something that speaks to you of a possibility of something bigger than our everyday experiences, something radically different, perhaps, of our everyday experiences. So to feel that potential within ourselves and to claim our potential for awakening, for freedom. All of us have this potential. To live by the qualities of a Buddha. A Buddha is awake, truthful, ethical, compassionate, equanimous. We can live in this way. We can be inspired by it. We can recognize the possibility of something deep and meaningful, and to recognize the qualities of an awake person, and as best we can to develop and cultivate those qualities in us. This, of course, doesn't mean that the qualities are always evident. It doesn't mean that we're always, you know, behaving such that a Buddha might behave, but that we trust that there's a path in which we can align ourselves with them. There's a direction, there's an orientation. So taking refuge in the Buddhas to orient our ways, ourselves towards this direction of these qualities. We might hold the notion that somehow we're flawed or imperfect in such a way that freedom isn't possible. Maybe we have this secret hidden idea or fear. Maybe we believe that we've had so many challenges in our lives that freedom isn't really possible. Or that awakening is only for those people who are monastics and sit in caves for decades or something like this. However, there's no one but us here. There aren't like these other people over there. It's all a sense of us. And these are the people who are finding greater and greater freedom, greater ease. There's people who are finding changes in their lives, changes in their views, and that can show up with kindness and equanimity and behave ethically. And we can be one of these people. This is something that we can wake up to, that we can grow into. It's a slow development, perhaps, but we just set the direction and walk the path. We can take refuge in the Buddha and the Buddha's awakening. And step by step, we can walk the path, drop by drop, as the water jug filled. It is possible to find greater ease, greater freedom, and peace. Who knows how far it can go? Maybe you'll find out. So in this way, may our orienting towards greater kindness, greater compassion, greater awakeness to what's really happening, may it be a support for ourselves and for everybody we come in contact with. And for the heart to settle in its true potential. And that we can show others, perhaps, the potential of all of our hearts. Thank you.